Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
The Max Chance Show is now on from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesdays. Hear eclectic music and a bit of comedy.
There's a place I must go. There's a place I must go. It's not a place I have seen.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel and Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel and Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel and Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X.
For a dream in motion, you turn a tender eyes to me. Steamers in the ocean, sweeter than any harmony. But you blinded me with silence.
She blinded me with silence.
Good morning. Welcome to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning, 11 until 12. It is the early May bank holiday weekend, so it's a Saturday the 3rd of May 2025. You're listening on Catch Up. It is, of course, the final of the snooker this week here in Sheffield. How fast has that gone? Yes. Indeed. Got Julian Paul here live as usual. We'll be speaking to RPG later on in the show. I think he's going to be talking about snooker. And of course, this week, and indeed every first Saturday of the month, our guest speaker is Phil Muffett from the Mexpert and Swinton Astronomical Society. At the minute, he's running around Manvers, I think, somewhere in the sunshine. He'll be doing his Eye on the Sky. We'll also be wishing him a happy birthday for Tuesday. Where has that year gone, eh? Next week, and indeed every second Saturday of the month, all being well, we should have Dr. Ogo Osamo on the line. First up, though, in terms of science news this week, the first new class of antibiotics in 25 years has been found in a soil sample in Canada. Lariocidin has a different structure and works in a different way to all known antibiotics, which means it is effective against superbugs that become resistant to other treatments. Antibiotic resistance is one of medicine's biggest problems, linked to 4.95 million deaths annually and climbing. Next up, Paul.
Yes, milkshakes and lattes are set to be hit by a sugar tax for the first time as the UK government moves to extend the levy to hundreds more soft drinks. Next, a new bone marrow test could help to double the chances of survival for patients with a rare and aggressive type of blood cancer. The highly sensitive new test can detect traces of the recurrence of acute myeloid leukemia in patients before it shows in blood tests, meaning that treatment can start at the earliest signs of the illness returning. And finally, would you offer up 1% of your income to fight climate change? If so, you are in the majority. In fact, 69% of the world's population would be in favour of such a move, according to a new global survey. The findings are part of the 89% project, and an initiative that aims to demonstrate that people who are worried about climate change are not actually in the minority.
All interesting stuff, eh? So, what do we know about blood tests for dementia? This year, a Swedish study found that a simple blood test could detect Tau proteins in the blood, which can cause Alzheimer's. In collaboration with the Alzheimer's Research UK and the National Institute for Health and Care Research, the Alzheimer's Society is behind the five-year blood biomarker challenge project, in which researchers at the University of Oxford, the University of Cambridge and University College London are assessing various blood tests for detecting Alzheimer's disease and other types of dementia. So Professor Vanessa Raymond, a senior clinical researcher at the University of Oxford and a member of the research team, describes the blood test for Tau 217 as one of the most promising biomarkers with the best accuracy in terms of diagnosing Alzheimer's today, adding, if we could identify early who is at risk and implement strategies, it could benefit a huge number of people. The Tau test is not available on the NHS, although for £1,000 you can have it at the Viva Longevity in London. But the hope is that it could be within a few years. If the tests are proven good enough, then more people should have access to them. All very interesting. And on that note, then, a few things to think about if you want to keep your brain healthy. What you need to know. I saw this article in the press. It's by somebody called Peter B, which is a woman, I believe. It's P-E-T-A, and then B as in bumblebee. So how do we best keep our brains healthy? Well, according to Dr. Sabine Donai, founder of the Viva Longevity Clinic, where we've just talked about that blood test, it is the small things we do every day that make the biggest difference to our brains over time. She said, we are looking at marginal gains from changing aspects of our diet and daily activity, as well as incorporating new habits, she says. It's never too late to start making these changes. And here is what she recommends. Number one, very interesting, eat a balanced diet. Scientists from the University of Warwick, the University of Cambridge and Fudan University in China, who examined the food preferences of almost 182,000 UK adults with an average age of 70, found that people who ate a more balanced diet had a better cognitive function and memory than those on a reduced carbohydrate, high protein or plant-based diet. Their findings, published in the journal Nature Health Mental Health, also showed that balanced eaters also had better brain morphology, defined as higher amounts of grey matter, which is the outermost layer of the brain, which is responsible for controlling movement, memory and emotion. So that's first important thing for your brain health, is eat a balanced diet, not just a carb diet or a high protein or this. Eat a wide range of food. Second, really important, exercise daily, even if it's just a walk. So people who are physically active are 20% less likely to develop dementia than those who aren't, according to the Alzheimer's Society. It doesn't matter how you stay active, but a combination of different types of exercise is probably best. A daily walk is the best place to start. With a 2022 JAMA Network study of almost 79,000 adults living in the UK showing that covering a daily total of around 10,000 steps was optimal for lowering the risk of dementia, but that even 4,000 steps a day at a faster pace led to lower incidences of dementia. Finally, before we get our PG on the line, eat more berries, ideally organic berries. A study from King's College London and the University of Reading, published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, showed that eating a handful of blueberries daily for 3 months led to benefits including improved memory and brain function in a group of healthy men and women aged 65 to 80. All berries are a great addition to a brain healthy diet, but that we should always try and buy organic wherever possible. Last year, an analysis of government figures by the campaign group Pesticide Action Network UK, or Pan UK for short, found unwanted traces of forever chemicals, which are PFAS or per and polyfluoral alkali substances, which hang around in the body to be present in 95% of 120 samples of strawberries. So there you go. That was a bit of Status Quo for this bank holiday weekend. Very interesting track. Something's going on in my head. And we played that because we're talking about how to keep your brain healthy. More of that in a future show. You're, of course, listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We should have our PG on the line. Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
Yes, happy bank holiday. It only seems 2 weeks or so since we had another bank holiday.
Yeah, they come together close.
They have, haven't they? And yeah. The weather's just about to leave us, I think, after this warm spell.
Yes, it's trailing off a bit, isn't it?
It is. So what's caught your eye this week in the science news then?
Well, on the local front, Sheffield University have been involved in some more research, and something that's close to my heart these days, that there are hundreds of genetic links to osteoarthritis. So they've taken part in this study where over 900 genetic links to osteoarthritis, including 500 that have never been reported before, have been uncovered in breakthrough research. So the findings will hopefully pave the way to the development of potential drug treatments, personalised therapies for people living with degenerative condition. Osteoarthritis affects around 595 million people globally, and they're expecting that to rise to over a billion people by 2050.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but currently there are no real disease-modifying treatments available. So this research, which was published in the journal Nature, is the largest ever genome-wide association study on osteoarthritis using genetic information from nearly 2 million people. So it's a very wide sort of section for research, and I say they've published it in the journal Nature, and it's an international research collaboration with sort of trying to focus on getting some kind of treatments available. So compare your genetic codes to the entire DNA of almost 500,000 individuals with osteoarthritis, and they're compared to that to about 1.5 million people without that condition. And the team identified 962 variations more commonly found in those with osteoarthritis, 513 of which had not previously been identified. So it's something I'm suffering with a bit in later years, and creaky knees and a stiff neck. But osteoarthritis is the leading cause of disability and chronic pain worldwide. Say affects over 595 million people globally, and that's expected to boost up to over a billion by 2050. So they've looked at the biomedical data sets, and researchers from Sheffield and Sheffield Teaching Hospitals Foundation Trust identified 700 genetic disease-associated variants that were implicated in the development of osteoarthritis.
Wow.
So it's, I think, Professor Mark Wilkinson, Professor of Orthopaedics at the University of Sheffield and Honorary Consultant Orthopaedic Surgeon at Sheffield Teaching Hospital, said, "These are hugely important findings which open up exciting new avenues in our search to find new drug treatments for millions of people living with osteoarthritis."
Wow.
So, great research again from Sheffield.
From our home city, eh? Brilliant.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And sort of looking around as well, something that we've harped on about, and there's yet more sort of evidence coming out, that heart disease deaths worldwide can be linked to chemical widely used in plastics. So they say that the study is from the Grossman School of Medicine and Langone Health, and they say daily exposure to certain chemicals used to make plastic household items can be linked to more than 356,000 global deaths from heart disease in 2018 alone. Again, it's a very wide survey, and it says that these chemicals called phthalates, P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-E-S, are widely used globally, and the Middle East, South Asia, East Asia and the Pacific bore a much larger share of the death toll than others, about three quarters. And they're saying that basically it's a softening agent that's used, but it's also for things in cosmetics, detergents, solvents, plastic pipes, bug repellents and other products. It's a particular phthalate called di-2-ethylhexyl phthalate.
Well done, Paul.
DEHP.
Wow.
And it's commonly used for making food containers, medical equipment and other plastics softer and more flexible. So, invasive plastics are a real crisis for the world, I think. And hopefully we'll look at more solutions. So, anyway, for a bit of fun, I thought I'd have a look at what's happening in Sheffield over the last couple of weeks. And I've been watching myself. I enjoy a bit of snooker. So Sheffield goes snooker loopy this time of year with the Crucible.
Yeah.
And I thought it was quite interesting, sort of watching. Ronnie O'Sullivan's come back to try for his eighth world record, but he's been suffering badly because of his cue and the components of his cue. So I was sort of looking at that and thinking, well, you take an awful lot for granted when you see things like swerve shots on the table. And I wondered if anybody had actually looked at the physics. And a chap called Gaspard Gustav Coriolis wrote a book in 1835 on the physics of pool and billiards.
Oh, I say.
He's a mathematician and physicist and an avid enthusiast of billiards back in the day. But the book was written originally in French and published in France. It was only translated to English in 2005. So, sort of looking, the problem Ronnie's been having is with the tip of his cue. And, you know, you've got sort of 5 feet-ish of cue to play around with, but it all comes down to a very compressed tip that's set into a metal ring, a ferrule at the end, and he's not been happy. And he's sort of upset, goes back to last year, I think, when he actually snapped his cue in half, his old cue, in frustration.
Oh, dear, temper.
Yeah, so he's really been trying to bring his cue action and his cue back into his game. So it's really quite sort of an interesting view, but if you look at the sort of physics, quite often it's the impact, and that's divided between the balls into, I think the first thing that, that they look at is inelastic collisions, and that's in where the initial ball hits the object ball that it's going to, but they don't bounce off each other, so the kinetic energy of the first ball doesn't get transferred through to other balls in entirety, but instead loses some energy in sound, heat and friction. Or the second is elastic collisions, where the energy in these remains the same. It means all the energy in the first ball gets transferred to the subsequent balls without getting lost in any of the heat, sound and other energy losses.
Wow.
If you have a look at the way snooker players, sometimes they lift the back end of the cue up very high to strike down on the ball. And what they're looking to do there is to basically impart spin to the ball. depending on which side of the sort of center line they hit, it'll spin out in an arc to either side, so they can swerve the ball around something that's in the way to hit their object ball, which is further down the table. and again, it's like anything else, a moving sphere that's spinning. Is it a real world problem? Well, yeah, it can be. There's a brilliant film, I think, that they showed again last week, called Hidden Figures. It's the story of three African-American women mathematicians who worked for NASA, and they helped to calculate the trajectories for Apollo 11 and the moon landing. So looking at what they're going to do when they're orbiting around the world or orbiting around the moon, they've got to realise if there is friction or if there's anything that's reducing speed, or indeed anything that could increase speed, because in effect they slingshot across the distance to achieve higher speeds than when they first break out of Earth's atmosphere or pull away from the moon. And again, you know, does it actually impact on us? Well, it could do, because we spoke about this a while ago. The DART mission, which was sent a satellite to impact into the Dimorphos asteroid to divert its path, and basically that changed the spin of the asteroid by several degrees by impacting it with something the size of a fridge hitting it. Which doesn't sound great, but in actual fact, the idea behind it is that we could divert something that's dangerously heading towards Earth and avoid a huge asteroid collision with Earth. So it's the same kind of physics of spheres.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the tips, there are kind of two basic differences. One's a softer tip, which can have more grip on the surface of the ball, and that can impart spin. And spin gives you better control. So there are a couple of things. There's a thing to estimate what they call a ghost ball, and that's when you've hit your target, where is the white ball going to finish? And if you look at the direction your Q-tip's in, hold your hand up with your thumb out at a right angle as much as it generally goes, you get about a 30-degree angle. And that should be the place where the ghost ball appears, or your real ball built.
Oh, Paul, you need a job commentating at the Crucible, I think.
Well, I think I think it's really kind of interesting to dig beyond, and I think that the other sort of option is to get a hard tip, which gives you more direct impacted force rather than imparting more spin. And because of the materials, I mean, there used to be compressed layers of leather to create a tip. Then it's other fabrics that were compressed to make a softer tip. And the hard tips moved towards sort of man-made materials, like nylon tips were tried and various other things. So it's a player's preference as to whether they want extra ball control by imparting spin to get that positional shot, or whether they're wanting a straight line impact and a direct sort of use. So it's one of the problems that players have had to deal with. And a lot of the time you'll see players going around the table using chalk. And it's a little cube of chalk they keep tucked in a pocket. And when they've used the cue, they'll look at the tip and inspect it, and apply a thin layer of chalk or a heavier layer, depending on their preference, to help with that control of the tip to the ball transferring energy in the way that you prefer. So there's much talk that, again, Ronnie, I think, still uses the old chalk that was everybody's sort of favourite. That was changed to a less dust-producing chalk, which is now commonly used by a lot of players. And you'll see the evidence if ever you walk around a table, if it's being played on, you'll see skid marks across the surface where some of that chalk dust has scattered when they've struck the ball. And quite often, again, you'll see the players ask the referee with his white gloves to give that white ball a polish because it's probably got residue of chalk from other players or previous shots. And some of the control that they're trying to achieve is so precise that a spot of chalk can actually make the ball deviate and they can miss the shot.
And you can ruin your chances and go out, like yeah. Ronnie has.
Absolutely. So,
yeah.
And I think, If you actually go in, there's a lot more physics behind the game.
Yeah.
And if you look at that, there's an awful lot that is applied for things like ball bearings. You know, what's the friction on a metal sphere? How's that applied? So will a bearing run free or will it be slowed? What's the impact going to be? And a lot of these are basic physical forces. So friction is one of the reasons why you tend to not be able to have a perpetual motion machine. Because in some way, there'll be friction applied which will slow the process down. It's the same with your snooker and billiard balls. If you're not careful, you'll actually impart something that gives it friction. So, again, one of the things that they said on the current snooker is there's a problem with the nap of the cloth.
Oh, yeah.
In the normal sort of snooker parlours that are where people go and train and enjoy things, it has a deeper pile, the fabric, to reduce, so it will last for months. Basically, in that harsher environment, whereas these match cloths on the tables have a very short fibre and it reduces what they call the nap. So if you tried cleaning your carpets and you brush in one direction and it's very hard work, you brush in another direction and it's very smooth, and that's generally due to the nap, the actual lean of the fibres. And if you brush with the lean, it's easy. If you brush against the lean, it's hard. So again, playing down a snooker table in current sort of game circumstances, these very short cloths make it a very fast table. So the balls will actually travel a lot quicker and a lot further. Again, the other thing is a rebound effect, and you'll find that around all the edges there's actually a sort of a rubber-like or a bouncy strip underneath the edge of the cloth, which will allow the balls to bounce back, so they can actually hit there and find speed in another direction. So if you snookered, which is part of the game, where the object ball that you're trying to hit is hidden by another ball in between, you start to bounce the ball off the rebounding cushions in the hopes of getting around behind the blocking ball to hit your object ball. So,
phew.
Interesting.
It
yeah.
is. Well, it's all physics and it's all maths as well, isn't it? The angles and everything.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Yeah. You ought to get a job commentating at the Crucible. That's what I say. Well, enjoy the rest of the bank holiday weekend, Paul.
Yes,
great stuff,
you.
As usual. Sit back. We've got a great track, Bruce Springsteen, Wrecking Ball.
Yes.
Ooh. Bye-bye, Paul. Bye.
Cheers. Bye. Bye.
I was raised out of steelhead swamps in Jersey some misty years ago. Through the mud and the beer, the blood and the cheers, I seen champions come and go. So if you got the guts, mister, if you got the balls, you think it's your time, then step to the line and bring on your wrecking ball. Bring on your wrecking ball. Bring on your wrecking ball. Come on and take your best shot and see what you got. Bring on your wrecking ball.
grow big as airplanes. Here where the blood is spilled, the arena's filled, giants play games. So raise up your glasses, let me hear your voices come. It's tonight all the dead are here, so bring on your wrecking ball. Bring on your wrecking ball. Bring on your wrecking ball. Come on and take your best shot. Let me see what you've got. Bring on your wrecking ball. One, two, three, four.
That was Wrecking Ball by Bruce Springsteen, because RPG was talking about the science behind the snooker. You're of course listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. We should have Phil Muffett on the line. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
Good morning. Come on, morning. You're in your office under the stairs. Admit it.
Harry Potter board.
I know. Well, thanks for joining us on this bank holiday weekend.
That's great to be here.
I know. And you've been out running this morning, haven't you? But you're not that happy, are you, with your performance?
Yeah, well, yes, we're just a little bit slow this morning, but I think I've upset stomach. Probably recovering from being in America last week.
Oh, you've had a busy... You have been around the world, haven't you?
I have.
I don't know how you do it all, Phil. You wear me out. No, just...
It's been a hectic month. It's been a really, really hectic month.
So you need to put your feet up now and rest for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah, well, I think it's gardening this afternoon.
Oh, dear. Because everything's growing. I know the feeling. But
I cut the grass before I went away at the beginning of the month, and I've come back and it's like worse than when I cut
exactly. So for people who don't know, you are a member of the Mexburton Swinton Astronomical Society.
Yes.
And since we last spoke, it turns out you've been on Radio Sheffield as well.
Yes, they wanted to do a bit of a piece on the observatory.
Yeah.
So me and Tony had the guy up there for a chat and a walk round.
Brilliant.
So hopefully had a bit more publicity.
Yeah, great stuff. And you said it's all right. You're not leaving us, are you, Phil? You're just spreading your wings.
I'm not defected.
You haven't
just
defected yet. And rumour has it you may be talking at the Wentworth Women's Institute at some point this year.
No, it'll be next year, next February.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
We've got to wait that long. Well,
I think they're booked up to February.
Yeah, well, you've got time to get your T-shirts made then, Phil.
I have.
I know, brilliant. So what's in the sky then, and anything else we should know?
Well, the planets are going to be difficult because, like, Mercury and Venus and Saturn are kind of morning events now. So they've moved around the sun, so they're up in the morning. So I'll not be seeing them. but our Jupiter's starting to set in an evening. So that's quite low down. So that's not Jupiter. Sorry, Uranus is really set now. So that's close to the sun. Then following it's Jupiter. So you can still see Jupiter in an evening. Just like Venus was earlier in the year, setting after the sun. Jupiter's starting to follow the sun there now, but Mars is still really quite high in the sky. So this week, I believe Mars is going to pass through a Messier object called the Beehive, which is M44. So it's an open star cluster. So there's a lot of stars in a small space. So if you look at Mars with a pair of binoculars or a telescope, you'll be able to see it travel past the stars night by night.
Wow.
So you'll actually get an appreciation of how far and how fast it's moving through space. So that's a really good thing to watch out for this week.
Wow.
Sun activity has gone up a bit as well. There's a couple of reasonable sized sunspots on the face of the sun. And if you follow Mick Nichols' Facebook page, Mick gets some lovely photos from him himself and his mates on there with the sun. And we've also had a few aurora alerts. However, they've not been big enough for us to really see them from South Yorkshire. But the sun has been quite active this past.
What's causing the auroras then?
Yes, yes, it is, yeah. The sunspot activity related to the amount of energy that's coming into the atmosphere.
So, obviously, you have been in America, and I'm pretty sure you got aurora alerts over there. Is that because the temperatures are higher, or...?
No, it's about the particles in the solar system coming from the sun. What I think the first weekend I was in America, there was a big solar flare, and I believe there was an aurora over the UK. I did see some photos on Facebook.
Taken.
So I don't know if we'd have seen that from, but somebody got a photograph from Norfolk and somebody from Lincolnshire, but the darker sides. So we are a bit hampered with the street lighting in South Yorkshire.
Oh, it's still a bone of contention, isn't it, then?
Yes. When you get aurora over Scotland, it's lower down for us because you're looking at an angle to the horizon. And the problem is that you can only see the brighter aurora, whereas the faint stuff's more difficult to see.
Interesting.
But anyway, yeah, so there was an aurora a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, we've lost you a bit, Phil. Reminding me.
Yeah.
It's because you've been banished to under the stairs, isn't it? Won't they let you out?
Yeah. The line is a bit quiet today.
It is. Yeah, you're right now. You're back.
Yeah. Noctilucent clouds might be present this month, so keep an eye. Noctilucent clouds in the northern hemisphere. Underneath the pole star, so they tend to appear more in June, but they tend to start at this time of the year.
And how would you spot them? You've talked about these before.
Yeah, well, the high wispy clouds that are illuminated underneath by the sun over the horizon, so they get a sky glow, so you can see them. If you see them, you'll know you've seen them, because they'll be kind of white and lit from underneath. So they're interesting to look out for. Constellation-wise, Ursa Major's really good at the moment. I had a quick look outside last night. It wasn't brilliant last night. We had a bit of cloud.
Yeah.
Ursa Major's overhead. So there's quite a few Messier objects and galaxies in and around Ursa Major, which are really good to look at this time of month. But the problem we have got is that the light is getting later in the evening.
It is.
So 10:30, 11:00 is when you want to be out observing.
Oh, that sounds late.
Yeah. Well, I suppose if there's anything interesting on TV, you can watch your TV programmes and then go out.
And then go out
afterwards before you go to bed.
No wonder you're not on top form for your early morning running if you're staying up late.
True.
You know,
that's
you can't burn the candle at both ends.
I didn't get any telescopes out last night because it looked, I could see some stars in areas, but there was some patchy clouds and there was a bit of a mist knocking about. Mm. So if conditions aren't really good, I just don't
know. It's not worth it, is it?
I might get the binoculars out just to find stuff and then just so I know where things are scattered about in the sky. I'll get a telescope out if I'm going to take some photos.
So if you've never looked at Ursa Major before, what's it look like and how do you find it?
Well, the majority of it is a big pan or a big plough.
It's
overhead. So it'll be straight above. You look north and then look up and it'll be over your head. And it looks like a big pan.
Is there a little plough as well?
Well, that's Ursa Minor.
And when would you see that?
You can see both of them all the time. It's called circumpolar, so they're never actually set. So earlier in the year, during the winter months, in an evening, between the pole and the horizon, when you get round to the summer, because all the constellations are turning round in the sky, because we're going through the seasons, it's overhead rather than on the horizon, because everything's turning round in the sky. So this is the kind of this month and next month in an evening, it's directly overhead.
And that's why it's so easy to see it.
Yeah, yeah. So the objects that are in there will be easy to photograph and easy to see because they're straight over your head. So it's a good time. I mean, I've been trying to photograph M51, which is a spiral galaxy in Ursa Major, but it's been between the horizon and the pole. This month it's moved around now so that in any night time it's overhead, so it might be easy to photograph. So I'm going to give that a go as well.
You know, go on.
Yeah, the other one about galaxies, if you're looking south, you can see Leo and Virgo and a constellation called Coma Berenices. There's a super galaxy cluster in that area of the sky, and this month and next month in an evening, it'll be ideal to photograph or observe any galaxies in that area as well.
Ooh, so these are your targets, are they, for this year?
Yes, yes. As things are moving round, it's like you want to make the best use of what's in the sky.
So what I was going to say is we've interviewed you on this show for a long, long time, and I've never, ever once heard you mention circumpolar. So what's all that about? You're saying they never, Ursa Major and Ursa Minor always there?
Yes. Through all the seasons, you always see those stars above the horizon, that sort of don't set.
So and that's all it means? They don't set?
Yes, so Ursa Major during 24 hours will go around the pole, but never below the horizon. But when you look at things like the zodiac constellations, they all rise in the east and then set in the west.
Do they?
Because they go around the Earth.
Well, wow.
Because the constellations are above the pole, and we're inclined in the sky to the sun, we get a patch of the sky where it never actually sets. And that's called circumpolar.
Well,
so you can observe objects in Ursa Major and Draco Ursa Magna all year round without it setting.
Yeah, well, amazing. So, you know, is this time of year then not the most exciting time of year for you astronomers then?
Well, no, I'll just be looking for different things. There's also the T Corona Borealis phenomena, which is a repeating flare star. They predicted it was going to explode last year, and it hasn't exploded yet. So the chances are stronger it's going to explode this year. Well, it's just started rising in the east in an evening. So I noticed it was up last night at half past 10, starting to rise. So I'm going to be following that during the summer so that if it explodes, we might be able to capture it when it explodes.
I'm afraid we've got, I think there must be a football match on today, Phil, because I don't know if you can hear that, but coming down Paternoster Row is a lot of chanting. We carry all sorts. This is what happens on live radio, Phil. You've been in here. Yes. You know where we are. So yes. I can't imagine it's to do with snooker, but I think it's to do with football, I would imagine. Blimey.
Yes. Yeah, so anyway, there's a repeating flare star. So there's a red giant and a dwarf star that are revolving around each other, and the star's ripping material off the other star.
Really?
And it'll get to a point where it'll explode, and then it'll settle back down to a smaller star again. So we're expecting that going pop again this year.
But you don't know exactly when.
No, we don't know exactly.
So how would you know? Do you get alerts? I know you track
stuff.
Well,
I'm going to be observing it. I'm every night I'm having a look.
Oh, to see.
It will be naked eye. When it explodes, it will be naked eye. So we'll be able to see a new star in the sky. So it won't be a new star. It'll be the same star that's been bright enough to be able to see.
Right. So how far away is it then?
Off the top of my head, I can't remember. It might be about 400 light years away.
Oh, but to be able to see it, then clearly it's...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it's a star that doesn't quite go supernova.
What's a supernova then?
It's a star near the end of its life that explodes into a into bits.
And then bits, and that's it. Done. Yes. So does your mind, if you know, because it's, you know, it's getting, it stays light for longer, are you more interested in the sun then during the summer months?
Well, personally, not me. I mean, I kind of leave the experts and I have a look at it when there's something interesting. So the moon, I'm following the moon during the summer because it's more easier. In the summer, there's less other things to see. However, there are things in the winter, like certain galaxies, that I'm going to try and pick up that I've not seen before.
Mm, interesting. So what have you got coming up at your club then in terms of club news or events?
I've looked at our webpage. I'm not sure what's on this month. Because I've been away all month.
Oh, because you've been gallivanting. Paul's going to have a look now then, because you generally have got all sorts of speakers on. And
yeah,
I think you've had
a full programme.
And you've had a photographic competition that was just for your members.
I think the favourite was Tom Wade's photograph of the Triangulum Galaxy M33, which is absolutely superb. It's on our webpage, on our Facebook page, so that's well worth having a look at.
Ah, so is he one of your new recruits, is he?
I joined us about 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
He was doing photography before we joined our club, and I've known him for many years, and he decided, I think the photography bit has got him hooked on the astronomy, so he's joined our club and he's got better and better.
Yeah, and people can follow you on Facebook and I think you're on Twitter, but you're probably more active on Facebook, I would say.
I think so.
And you're still having your meetings at St John's Church Hall?
In Mixborough. That's right.
Yeah, didn't I read that you couldn't have one or something because somebody needed it?
Last week in the election, so we had the...
Of course there was,
The observatory.
Yeah, interesting.
Town halls and church halls for those towns.
Have you got any more public outreach events coming up at Hoover? Or
We will be having some at the observatory on Sundays. Have a look at our webpage, and we're also doing Wentworth Village Fair, I believe.
Oh, yeah?
And I think we've also got something coming up at RSPB. I haven't got the dates in my head.
Yeah, so if people want to check out your website, it's msas.org.uk. Your website's really good, actually. You've got some great pictures on there.
Yes,
and your guest speakers, I mean, you've got a full programme, haven't you?
Yes. Trying
to... Oh, you're breaking up a bit, Phil. I think it's because you're still under the stairs. Are you not too warm?
It's a bit of a dodgy line today.
It is, isn't it? I don't know if it's us or you.
Well, it's a bit faint at your end.
Eh? Is it faint at our end
as well?
Oh, dear. Oh, this ain't good, is it, eh? On a bank holiday. Never mind.
Yeah. Yeah, so long as the we've had a really good weather window this past few days as well.
And when you say that, is it that because it's been warm and clear?
It's been clear. We've had a couple of clear nights. It's just unfortunately I've not been at home, but I'm hoping we're going to get some clear weather next week.
Well, but it'll be colder, Phil. The temperatures are going back.
Yeah, well, if it's above 10 degrees, I'll be happy.
Very interesting. So we're going to let you go, Phil, because you're tired, aren't you? And you need to put your feet up now because you've got some gardening to do.
I think a cup of tea time, a sandwich and a bit of gardening.
And a bit of gardening.
I'm hoping it's going to be clear for people to do some observing, and I'm going to try and do a bit more photography this month.
Excellent. Okay, so we'll speak to you. When will we speak to you? It might be end of this month, I don't know, or early next month.
And just drop me a line and I'll be here.
Excellent. Great stuff, Phil. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Are you going to watch any snooker? Are you going to watch any snooker?
I might do in the evening.
Have you been watching any at all?
I've been listening to it on the radio, but I've not had a chance to see any.
That's not quite the same, is it?
No.
It's like watching it in black and white. Surely.
I remember the days of black and white TV.
Well, I do, and it weren't much fun trying to watch a snooker game, was it? Because they all look the same. Brilliant stuff, Phil, as always. Bye-bye, enjoy your weekend.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
'Cause you're a sky, 'cause you're a sky full of stars. I'm gonna give you my heart. 'Cause you're a sky, 'cause you're a sky full of stars. 'Cause you light up the path.
That was absolutely fantastic.
You've just experienced the Life Science Radio Show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Contact us, send us an email to livescience@sheffieldlive.org. To check us out, go to Twitter, #LifeScienceChef, with just one F. And to listen to or download podcasts, sheffieldlive.org, go to the radio shows tab find The Life Science Radio Show and fill your boots. See you next week.